Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, Raise the Bar Hancock County continues to earn recognition for their workforce development programs, and each recognition provides the opportunity to raise their own bar. Also this morning, if your kids are looking for a good summer read, author Jerry Spinelli talks about the new title in his Rule the School series, Fifth Grade Top Dogs, which he says grown-ups might like as well. And as America prepares to celebrate its 250th birthday, the new History Tellers Award is shining a national spotlight on the educators, guides, storytellers, and interpreters who keep our past alive and engaging for a new generation. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, June 25th, 2026. Hey, do you realize that we are halfway to Christmas? I'm just saying, it's June 25th. So, at that halfway point, if you haven't started your shopping already, still have a couple of days left in Prime Days on Amazon to do your shopping, get an early start on your holiday shopping. I'm just saying, we're halfway there. So this is really cool. I saw this on the State Newswire. The National Veterans Memorial and Museum is set to display works of art by former President George W. Bush later this year. If you're looking for a day trip, this is in Columbus, the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. An exhibit featuring the former president's original paintings is opening up August 8th. It is called a display called Portraits of Courage, a Commander-in-Chief's Tribute to America's Warriors. Features portraits and a mural of military members and veterans who have served since 9/11. The exhibit will be open to the public in Columbus through the end of the year, but it opens August 8th. You know, circle that in your calendar. If you're looking for a quick day trip, that would definitely be something worth checking out. Pretty cool. I didn't realize that George W. Bush was a painter. Actually, I think I did realize that. I think I've heard that before, but I had forgotten. That is pretty cool stuff. By the way, speaking of state news, right below that item on the State Newswire, I saw this, and it's a sad story, but it really brings up an interesting point from a legal standpoint, I think. A Columbus family is now filing a lawsuit over a deadly shooting earlier this year outside of a Florida Airbnb. Family of Columbus resident Douglas Kraft are pursuing litigation against a homeowners association and the owner of a short-term rental in Kissimmee, Florida, so just outside of Orlando. The plaintiffs argue that the defendants knew or should have known that 29-year-old Ahmed Boja was dangerous and unstable and lived beside the rental house when he fatally shot Mr. Kraft, his brother, and another Ohio man who were staying at that Airbnb while visiting Florida to attend a car show back in January. They say that Mr. Boja has a lengthy history of violent crime and steps should have been taken to protect the guests who stayed next door to his home. And I think this brings up a really interesting point because Airbnbs have become very popular, these short-term rentals, individuals who rent out their houses overnight. And my wife and I have stayed in a number of them. And quite often they are in residential neighborhoods or areas where there are neighbors. How much do you know about the neighbors of those short-term rental properties? And I never really thought about that. But is that something that Airbnb owners, managers should be responsible for? I don't know. We'll find out what the courts say with this, but it does bring up an interesting point that I never really thought about. One of the added layers that you have to consider when you're booking an Airbnb. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started. Would you be surprised to learn that 18 states, including Ohio, have no specific law against wagering on the outcome of an election. It is an election year, the midterms coming up later this year, and online wagering is like the trendy thing now. You can bet on just about anything. In Ohio and 17 other states and the District of Columbia, incidentally, there is no specific law against wagering on the outcome of an election. This is a new analysis from Pew Research Center finds that 23 states specifically and explicitly prohibit election betting entirely. 9 others apply partial restrictions. The remaining 18 states and D.C., again, including Ohio, have no specific laws on the subject. The findings come amid surging activity on prediction markets, Kalshi and Polymarket. You can wager on literally anything. And federal regulators argue that these platforms trade financial products, not bets. But state regulators in Ohio consider these platforms to be operating unlicensed sports books. As such, they are not permitted in Ohio. But that said, there is no specific language in the Ohio Revised Code prohibiting wagering on elections in Ohio, meaning that if Kalshi and Polymarket, these prediction markets, if they were to gain legal status in the state, there would be nothing explicitly prohibiting it. I don't know. That may be something that lawmakers in Columbus may want to proactively address, kind of, or not. I don't know. Is that a good thing? I mean, do you care if people are wagering on the outcome of an election? I mean, philosophically, I look at that and I say that's a really bad idea. But then you step back and say, well, I guess you can wager on anything else. Why not? So I don't know. But you can't in Ohio, but only in a roundabout way, as it turns out. So thought that was kind of interesting. I saw this got big headlines when it happened, so it should be reported with equal fervor now that it is unhappened. Elon Musk is no longer a trillionaire. You remember, it was huge headlines when the tech mogul achieved trillionaire status following the record IPO for SpaceX earlier this month. But stock prices, SpaceX's stock price has fallen since its IPO, dragging Elon Musk's wealth down with it. Bloomberg's Billionaires Index says Elon Musk's fortune peaked at about $1.4 trillion right after the IPO and has now fallen to just about $957 billion. So, not a trillionaire. He is still far and away the world's richest man, but no longer in a class all his own. So, since it made huge headlines when it happened, it seems appropriate to pass that word along now that it is unhappened, if you will. So, and lastly here, among the first things you need to know, most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, it's going to be hot again next week. It was beautiful yesterday. I mean, it was absolutely beautiful yesterday, right up until the very end of the concert at Riverside Park. Riverside Civic Concert Series and the Findlay Civic Concert Band having their 75th anniversary concert, and there was the community picnic. Huge crowd at the park. It was great. Beautiful day. Right at the end, it started to rain a little bit of sprinkles. But all in all, gorgeous day yesterday. Next week, it's going to be very hot again. But be glad you are not in Europe right now. Have you heard about the heat wave they are getting across the south and central areas of England, including Wales? Temperatures are forecast to climb to at least 39 degrees Celsius, which for those of us in the U.S. who have no idea what that means, that's about 102 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, the highest record temperature for the month of June in the United Kingdom ever was 96. And that was in 1976. So it's been 50 years since they've had anything close to what they're going to get this week at 102. Meanwhile, France is expecting temperatures near 104 degrees Fahrenheit this week. And that's before any kind of heat index. That's the actual air temperature, 104. And that surpasses its previous June record of 84 degrees. Wow. 84 is the record high for June in France. And they are going to be at 104 this week. In fact, things are so bad in France that authorities in that country have banned alcohol consumption on the streets and urged everyone to drink only water. You know that it is serious if the people in France are saying, don't drink wine. Spain, too, also experiencing major heat conditions across the country, reaching as high as 105 degrees Fahrenheit. Although they've got, you know, coastline where it's a little cooler, they say. But, man, 102, 104, 105. We're not going to be that hot next week. Be glad you're not in Europe right now. I know, you may be glad you're not in Europe right now for a number of reasons, but that would certainly be one of them. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. It'll be partly cloudy today with a high around 80, mostly cloudy tonight, low in the 60s. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office says it executed a search warrant in Rawson that was assigned to them by the Ohio Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. The Sheriff's Office said the search warrant, which was conducted at an address on West Vance Street, yielded several electronic devices which will be forensically examined for any material related to the investigation. The Sheriff's Office said during the search warrant, numerous dogs were found inside the residence living in deplorable conditions, and the Humane Society was contacted and responded to the scene and will be consulting with the prosecutor's office regarding the care of the dogs. Get more on our website. With bear sightings in the state at an all-time high, officials are attempting to learn more about them.
State wildlife officials have put a tracking collar on a massive 576-pound black bear. The bear's movements and behavior will be tracked for research. The Ohio Division of Wildlife says black bear sightings across the state have reached an all-time high. There were 537 sightings in 69 Ohio counties last year. The number is more than double from the number they tallied in 2023.
ONN's Jeff Hogan reporting. Get more on our website. Hancock Public Health is informing residents that it will be conducting mosquito spraying in Hancock County communities over the summer months. The health department says if you'd like to have your residents be excluded from having the sprayer go by, you can contact them by phone or email. And if you notified their office last year, you don't have to notify them again this year. The Findlay City Schools Alumni Association is encouraging people to nominate a Findlay graduate for the Distinguished Alumni Award. The Alumni Association says the award goes to a Findlay City Schools graduate who has made a lasting impact in their profession, community, or beyond. We have a link to the nomination form and this story on our website. Don't forget, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, Raise the Bar Hancock County continues to earn recognition for their workforce development programs, and Executive Director Tricia Valesque is with us this morning to talk about how each of those recognitions provides the opportunity to raise their own bar. And Tricia, thanks very much for being with us. It's kind of like raising the bar.
Raise the bar. Yeah, it is all kinds of... We can say it in all kinds of ways. It's always fun to talk about raising the bar.
So talk a little bit about these. This was actually three significant designations that you were awarded for these workforce development programs in just 3 weeks' time. So, you know, coming fast and furious here. Tell us what they are and what the significance of them is.
Sure. So, as a whole, when we look at each one of them, they're from different agencies and entities throughout the state of Ohio, but they're all recognition that the work that Raise the Bar is doing is driven by partnerships. It is collaborative. It is moving the needle on all things from cradle to career, helping prepare our next workforce. And it's just a recognition that the work that we're doing is in line with where the state of Ohio itself is heading for careers in all different sectors. So the one of them is the Ohio Manufacturers Association. This is one of the strongest professional associations that employers belong to in Ohio, and it's a powerhouse throughout the nation. We have once again received an endorsed partnership from them. They have their presence around the entire state of Ohio in different geographic areas, and we, as well as Putnam County, is also, shout out to them. They have a workforce collaborative over there that's also endorsed by OMA. We have received the sixth round of the Ohio Department of Development's Industry Sector Partnerships grants. We went 6 for 6 on this one. It's huge for us. It's a great investment in the work that we do and where we think we need to be going for our region. And then there is another one that's just recognizing our long-term cradle to career collaborative that we've always been doing. And now this the state is starting to recognize those entities too.
That with from the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce. So the Education and Workforce recognition, the Ohio Manufacturers Association recognition, those are more recognitions, whereas the Department of Development has a grant attached to this.
Yes. OMA, the Ohio Manufacturers Association, it's always great because when they go out for large grants. We were a sub grant for them when we were doing Work Advance for 3 years. So our community was benefiting from that partnership because of their funding that's flowed down to us. Mm-hmm. And then the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce, that's a brand new one. The governor will soon be announcing who all received it around the state of Ohio. And I but yes, there is funding attached to it, but it is now it's in the Ohio Revised Code. So that is something that'll be sticking around for all of Ohio to benefit from for a while.
And talk a little bit about where that funding goes, what you do with that funding, putting it to use to further those goals of Raise the Bar.
We are really honored to say that 95% of our funding goes directly back into the programs and services that support our community. We focus a lot on helping those students in kindergarten all the way through 12th grade get ready for graduation and then whatever comes next. We are very heavily involved with all of the school districts here in the county, including Millstream. We are partners with Finley Digital Academy. So we try to leave no stone unturned, and we do everything from career events, giving those students exposure to different employers, different professionals, different workplaces, helping them interview, practice that, all the way to finding out, like, where am I going to go after I'm done with high school? Is it to college? Is it to the workforce? Is it to a technical skilled, like welding type of program? Mm-hmm. And then with the adult side too, I mean, there's a lot that goes on with college students. College students come all the time to our community. They come all the time to Northwest Ohio. How are we interacting with them to make sure that they know great employers exist here in our community and want to intern with them, co-op with them, and hopefully when they graduate, get a job with them. And then we also just try to invest in making sure that the nonprofits in our community and others, the employers know what resources exist in order to leverage funding, leverage tools and resources in the toolbox that they can use for their own employees' benefits.
you do this, you mentioned the partnerships with the schools in Hancock County. And in fact, you recently completed a summer educator workshop. Yeah. Tell us more about this.
We always, for the past 5 years, have offered a summer educator experience for any Hancock County educator that wants to join us, because we realize that when they get to go to school to be a teacher, they learn to be a teacher, and then their jobs exist within the four walls of a school. And yet every single day they know they are preparing their students for whatever's next. Mm-hmm. So we take them out into different workplaces and allow them to learn about different industries, different work types, different employers. They get to see it firsthand. And this year we took them to numerous locations throughout our community, and they learned about everything from construction to assisted living to marketing and everything in between. And they really enjoy that chance because they say, aha, I get it now, or I had no idea that these opportunities existed, or I know of a student that would be perfect for this type of a job. Mm. And the proverbial light bulb is going off all day, and we do it for 3 days with them. And then at the end, the teachers prepare lesson plans and they get to share those with us. They're going to use those in the classrooms, but then they can share it so other teachers around our county can also use that resource with their students.
I would imagine, in addition to shaping lesson plans surrounding these experiences, also allows them to take the established curriculum and apply it and give it some relevance to the students as well. So it's not so much about changing the curriculum as it is making it relevant for the students to understand, hey, this is why this is important. How many times have we all said, when am I going to use this in real life? And maybe they can actually tell them now.
Oh, yeah. The teachers always say, my kids have no idea. They keep saying, I'll never use this. And now they know, oh, I can prove it to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the key things, I want to go back to something that you mentioned a little bit earlier, because certainly there's no guarantee of this, but the goal is to prepare a qualified workforce that will hopefully stay within Hancock County. And, you know, again, they may or may not, but the goal is to build up our own workforce for the benefit of both current and future employers locally. That's really where this all came from to begin with.
Exactly. And we can always say the skills are always going to change. There's a moving target on the skills that are needed. There's no doubt. But what we all believe in is that when we focus on our community and benefiting those who live here, who want to live here, who want to work here, that there is opportunity for them. And when we work with economic development and as they're, you know, working with future employers to come here, there's a way for our community to say, we have this strategy in mind when we're trying to develop your next talent. And when we work with all of the higher ed partners, Northwest Ohio is flush with great higher ed trainers and institutions. And when we work in partnership with them, they too can communicate and know what we have down here. We don't want to be a hidden secret, but yet we want to maintain our values and what makes us Finley.
Yeah.
But also we want people to recognize we have amazing employers and opportunities here to come work. And if you want to come learn, come be a part of it with us.
How often have we heard it said that we need to continue to attract good paying career opportunity jobs to our area? And this is one piece of the puzzle that helps us do that moving forward. So,
yep, it is. There's nothing but strategy flowing out of this office for sure.
Again, Tricia Valesque with Raise the Bar Hancock County, three big designations being received here just within the past month or so. And as we mentioned, just finished up the summer program for educators. Good things happening. Raise the Bar Hancock County. And Tricia Valesque, thanks very much for being with us this morning. We appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Chris. Thank you.
So a quick programming note. Originally in this segment, we had planned to speak this morning with Senator John Husted. a couple of really interesting legislative matters to discuss. But late last night, the senator informed us, the senator's staff informed us that because of a change in the Senate schedule, he would be unable to join us this morning. And so instead, he will be with us on the program tomorrow. And so because of that, fortunately, the gentleman that we had planned to speak with tomorrow on the program in this segment is able to join us today. And so just a quick little switcheroo. It happens sometimes, and we appreciate that. Jerry Spinelli is with us. You may recognize the name. He has written over 30 novels for young readers in a 40-year career. He won the Newbery Medal. And, you know, he's just written all kinds of series. But most recently, his latest effort is returning to a series that he started more than 15 years ago. After a decade and a half break, the book is Fifth Grade Top Dogs, part of his Rule the School series. Author Jerry Spinelli with us this morning. What pulled you back into the Rule the School series after so many years?
As often happens with half of the things in my life, it was a persuasion from my wife. It was her idea. She thought that third grade angels was nice, fourth grade rats was nice, and maybe it's time for another one. And so I'm smart enough to take her advice, and so I took it from there.
So you think you've kind of put this on the shelf, gone off to other things, and yet you come back to this to do the fifth grade book, and obviously a lot has changed in terms of what grade school is like today versus even a couple of years ago, let alone, 10, 15 years ago. So how did it feel to kind of revisit those characters and kind of the new dynamics that this book tackles?
Yeah. I think I actually blundered into a good thing in those terms, because as you say, grade school, fifth grade, the whole deal is much different now than it was 5 years ago, not to mention 50 years ago.
Yeah.
The haircuts are different. The clothes are different. Many of the details of a kid's life are different. And so what do I do? Do I hide behind the sofa and take notes on how my grandkids are speaking and behaving so I can get a keep up to date? No, I don't do that. What I do is I remember. I just remember what it was like myself back in fifth grade. Why is that a good idea? Because, and here's where I get lucky, because kids don't change.
Well,
their haircuts do, their clothes do.
Yeah.
But What makes them happy? What scares them? Their feelings and thoughts and so forth are pretty much the same from generation to generation. And so I write my stories based quite a bit on my own memories of when I was a kid. And yet, as I recall, a letter I got from a kid once, he said, how do you know what it's like to be in my life? And this kid was like 40 years younger than me.
Yeah.
But that's what you do. You put yourself in somebody else's place.
Well,
and if you do it well enough, they take it to heart and they absorb it themselves as if it's themselves that they're reading about.
Well, I was going to ask, there are, for all of the changes the past generation, what is still relevant and that universal part of childhood that transcends generational changes.
Yeah.
At the same time, How do you address the changes that have happened with respect to the social, the technology that has changed, the cultural changes that really impact not so much, you know, the feelings that kids have, but the way they express themselves and maybe what drives some of those universal feelings today?
Well, sure. And it helps to have an ear. One of the things that I enjoy most about writing is doing dialogue. Obviously, I can't have kids going around saying, "Oh, that's swell," you know?
Right.
No, they're going to say, "Oh, that's cool."
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And they're going to call each other, call each other dude and bro.
Yeah.
And so forth. So it's having an ear and combining the ear and the eyes that see the way things are happening up to the minute, combining that with those more eternal qualities that I was talking about.
Yeah. It strikes me that the audience for this is actually kind of twofold. Those who are in that period of life now, today's fifth graders, and maybe those who were fans of the earlier books who are now adults. So first of all, I'll speak to both of those real quickly. For today's fifth graders, what do you hope they take away from this story?
I would hope that they take away from the story just that, the story, just that, that they have, I just read a cool story. I relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like I could be in it.
Yeah.
I say that because my goal at starting out writing every one of my 39 books has been to tell a good story. I'm not delivering a sermon.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think, especially about kids' books, that that's what they are. They're just sermons in disguise.
Yeah.
Well, mine are not. And sure, you're going to find lessons in it and so forth. Okay, that's fine. But that's what I would like a kid today, reading it today, that they come away from it with a feeling that they've just read a good story and they'd like to read another one.
What about for those now grown-up fans of the books, the previous books in the series that they may have read when they were kids? What do you hope that they experience or they take away from this one?
Hopefully they will come to see what I, the truth of something that I often say. And that is that I don't write for kids. I write about kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that whether you're 10 or 50, hopefully, you can pick up a book of mine and it's going to make sense to you. It's going to feel right and comfortable to you because I'm not writing down or I'm not specifically targeting any age group. I'm writing for everybody. I'm writing for the story.
It also strikes me that this would be a perfect title if you know, kids and parents could be reading the same book, have a little book club between, you know, kind of that shared experience between parent and child.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
I remember once visiting a living room in the town I lived in, and that's what they had, a parent and kid book club.
Yeah. Jerry Spinelli is the author of Fifth Grade Top Dogs. It is the long-delayed latest installment of the Rule the School series. Jerry, do you have a website where folks can get more information?
JerrySpinelliAuthor.com.
Jerry Spinelli, thanks very much for taking the time. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Hopes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In the news business, there are two separate and distinct groups: breaking news and the news that is already broken. These are their stories.
In Sharon, Mississippi, Pastor Matt Olson recently preached continuously for 96 hours over the course of 4 days, from May 30th to June 3rd, covering the entire Bible from Genesis to Revelation. One sermon. Apparently, he thought his congregation was never coming back, so he decided to get it all in at once. Leaders at the First Baptist Church initially thought that their senior pastor was crazy, but supported the effort by praying and live streaming online. Although, Pastor Olson emphasized the effort was not about publicity, was not about setting records, it was about honoring God. Can you imagine going to service on Sunday morning, preacher saying, "Hey, hope you're comfortable because we're going to be here for a while. I got you here, so we're going to go over it all." Elsewhere in the broken news, Dateline Laurel County, Kentucky, where two people are facing charges after drugs were allegedly found inside a vehicle. It was a rather unusual case. Police were called to a business following a report of a suspicious vehicle parked in an employee parking area. When cops arrived, they noticed a bag inside the vehicle, which was emblazoned with the writing, "Definitely not a bag of drugs." And that kind of piqued their interest. So they did a search, and sure enough, they found narcotics and drug paraphernalia, yes, in the bag. It was apparently mislabeled, not a bag full of drugs. Because it was full of drugs. They're facing charges. Let's see. What else is going on? A man in Englishtown, New Jersey, who was once a hitman for the mob, is now due back in court to face extortion charges of his own. In 2009, John Alite testified against John Gotti in a federal trial. Now, Mr. Alite himself is facing multiple charges, including loan sharking, after state police discovered 24 knives and a pair of brass knuckles in his home. His next court hearing scheduled for this week. It is unclear, this is what makes it worthy of the broken news, it is unclear whether he will be forced to resign his position as a city councilman due to the charges. As a city, well, it is New Jersey. So it's about par for the course, I think. And finally, here in the broken news this morning, in Lake County, Florida, two men have been arrested for allegedly participating in an illegal street race, reaching speeds of 125 miles an hour in a 45 mile an hour zone. 125 in a 45. Philip Signorito, age 57, and William Bosworth, age 85, were apprehended after they blew past a sheriff's cruiser. But despite being caught red-handed, both men denied the allegations, with Mr. Bosworth telling deputies, quote, "I was just out having a ride in my favorite car." All while smoking a cigarillo, he said. 57 and 85 years old, clocked at 125. It's time to take Grandpa's keys away. It's time to sit Grandpa down and have a little talk. There you go. That is today's broken news. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Did you know more than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio for their news, traffic, weather, sports, and a community connection? AM radio is the backbone of the emergency alert system, keeping Americans safe in dangerous times. This is News Director Matt Demchak. AM 1330 WFIN is here to serve you, and we take seriously our commitment to our listeners. We would love to hear what you value most about AM radio. Visit WeAreBroadcasters.com and tell us how you depend on AM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. So we were just a bit ago talking about building a prepared workforce for good careers of the future through the Raise the Bar program of Hancock County. What do young people today want in their future careers? This is a survey of 2,000 parents and their kids between the ages of 5 and 16. They call it Generation Alpha. And they find that despite the rise of artificial intelligence, most of this age group still wants to work in a physical, hands-on career. In this survey, 85% of kids want hands-on jobs. Despite the rise of artificial intelligence, AI, 85% of kids want hands-on jobs. Additionally, 90% want careers helping people. 87% value creativity. Among kids familiar with trade work, 70% expressed interest in blue-collar careers. That is certainly good news, because we have a shortage in any number of the skilled trades. You talk to anyone in a skilled trade, and they'll just about everyone will tell, one of them will tell you, we've got a shortage. We need the kids to pursue these careers. Skilled trade jobs are worthwhile and shouldn't be considered just as a backup plan to four-year degrees, according to Dave Schneider. He is the chief marketing officer at Red Wings. Red Wing Shoes commissioned the survey. Most parents, 90%, agreed that happiness, not wealth, defines success for their child. So as America prepares to celebrate its 250th birthday, the new History Tellers Award is shining a national spotlight on the educators, guides, storytellers, and interpreters who make history engaging for audiences of all ages. Created by Mars Incorporated and American Heritage Chocolate, this award aims to recognize the passionate individuals who preserve America's past and help connect future generations to the stories that shaped our nation. Joining us this morning are American Heritage Chocolate historian Dave Borgasani and Marcus Smith from the Du Bois Freedom Center, winner of the 2026 History Tellers Award. Marcus, let me start with you, actually. Talk about why preserving and sharing history is especially important as we mark this milestone of commemorating our semi-quincentennial.
Absolutely. Well, first, I'll lean on the wisdom of Du Bois, who once said that the importance of history and the importance of historians is towards the guidance of humanity. And so when we think about history, when you think about engaging with it, it's to really understand the past, to inform the present, to really envision a future for ourselves. So history is never more important than ever, as we're doing at the 250th, and we're really exploring these ideals across the country and what we want next for ourselves as a nation.
So, Dave, tell us more about the History Tellers Award.
So, again, most people know that Mars makes great chocolate brands, but one of the things that many people don't know is that Mars, along with American Heritage Chocolate, which is a brand based upon authentic recipes from the 1700s, have been committed to preserving American history for over two decades now. But as our nation celebrates its 250th anniversary, we wanted to shine a spotlight on the people who helped connect audiences to our nation's past in meaningful ways. And the History Tellers Award was created to do just that. The new award celebrates individuals just like this year's winner, Marcus Smith, from the Du Bois Freedom Center in Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
So, Marcus, talk a little bit, for those who are not familiar with the Du Bois Freedom Center, talk a little bit about what you do.
Du Bois, we focus on the figure known as W. Du Bois, who was one of the premier architects of the Civil Rights Movement and one of the founders of the NAACP in 1909, and a native son of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, where we're based. So through events and programmings, we explore his life, his legacy, and his contributions to the United States. He was such a pioneer for the Civil Rights Movement that when he passed a day before the March on Washington, Roy Wilkins, the executive secretary of the NAACP, honored him by saying, at the dawn of the 20th century, his is the voice that is calling you today to stand in support of this cause. And we believe his voice is important was now as it was then, especially his conversations around democracy and its promises, as well as civic responsibility. And so we explore that, we detail it, as well as the broader Black history in the Berkshires with our community and with our partners.
to hear you talk about that, you can just tell the passion that you have for this history. What inspired that in you?
You know, I always give honor and credit to my grandparents who instilled in us at an early age the importance of preserving history, sharing it, celebrating it, and holding it close to heart, both as a matter of individual pride, but as a collective responsibility to carry it forward. So for me, winning this award is a way to both honor them and the mission that they instilled in me to do this work, not only at the Du Bois Freedom Center, but more broadly.
And talk about the role that museums such as yours, historic sites, and these living historians that, again, we are honoring with this award, are able to keep all of this relevant for a new generation.
Yes. When we think about it, you know, most people don't get their history from history books.
Yeah.
They get it from film, they get it from museums, they get it from interpersonal engagement. And what's important about that human connection with respect to the work that many professionals like myself and that Mars is, you know, is honoring, is that it's really fundamentally about communication. It's about empathy. It's about community building through a shared history and the values that history communicates. So being on the front lines, talking to people, hearing their stories, and sharing ours is what really makes our society move in the direction that we want it to.
Now, Dave, I have to ask you, because you mentioned this earlier, and it has piqued my interest. You talk about American Heritage Chocolate using authentic recipes from, like, the earliest days of the American colonies. You are, as we said, a chocolate historian yourself. You say the story of the birth of America, America's earliest days, really cannot be told without chocolate. Explain.
Well, you're exactly right. And again, chocolate, we know, really made its start up in about the Boston area around 1650 and quickly spread throughout the New England colonies and eventually to all 13 of the colonies. But one of the things that made chocolate very unique back then, really two things. First of all, we drank our chocolate. Chocolate was a thick, rich, satisfying drink that was consumed by all levels of society. But chocolate was not the way we enjoy it today. It was flavored with different spices. So chocolate was very delicious, but it had a very complex flavor. So often different spices like vanilla, red pepper, even things like cinnamon, nutmeg, anise, orange could have been blended into the chocolate, which is what we have reproduced with American Heritage Chocolate. And if you like the idea of it, by all means, do check out some historic sites, because we have over 30 historic sites really in the Mid-Atlantic and the New England who do feature American Heritage Chocolate and love to tell the story of chocolate at their site.
Storytellers themselves. Really sounds fascinating. I have to check that out. And again, Dave Borgasani and Marcus Smith with us this morning talking about the History Tellers Award from Mars Incorporated. Marcus, for those who are interested in learning more about the Du Bois Freedom Center, do you have a website where folks can learn more about what you do online, by the way?
Absolutely. We can visit anyone. You can learn more about us and our work at the Du Bois FreedomCenter.org. D-U-B-O-I-S, FreedomCenter.org.
And Dave, where can we get more information about the History Tellers Award?
Yeah, so for not only the History Tellers Award, learn more about American Heritage Chocolate, maybe just the history of chocolate itself and Mars's ongoing commitment to American history, go to AmericanHeritageChocolate.com. We've got a lot of information on there that we hope you'll enjoy.
Counting down to America's semi-quincentennial. Again, I've been practicing that word, so I'm going to use it as many times as I can over the next week or so. Dave Borgasani, Marcus Smith, thank you both for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Also, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform when you get a chance. That will help others discover the show as well. Thank you very much. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, as we finish up the week, Findlay pays tribute to the late city auditor, councilman, mayor, economic development director, and flood mitigation champion, Tony Iriti. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.